You ever get that feeling, like the more we learn about AI, the more we start seeing ourselves in those classic robot takeover movies?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's today's topic, that little knot of anxiety that seems to come with every AI breakthrough. We're diving into that today.
Okay, sounds interesting.
We've got these excerpts from Paul Jorion, really fascinating stuff, and he uses this great analogy. It's about Givens, those apes constantly looking over their shoulders, worried about what's coming next.
Right.
It's like he's saying, hey, we humans, we're smart, right? We crave knowledge, but maybe we're also just a little too ready to jump to that worst case scenario. So what exactly is it that's got us so spooked about AI?
I'd say it goes beyond just the idea of killer robots, like those sci-fi tropes. It's something deeper.
Okay, so what is it then?
It's about what Jorian calls the, well, he calls it the melancholy of the singularity. And just so we're all on the same page here,
Yeah, good point.
the singularity, it's that theoretical point in time when AI, artificial intelligence, surpasses human intelligence, becomes smarter than us.
Right. And it's a bit unsettling when you really think about it.
Exactly. It's like, imagine for a second what that would feel like, us not being the smartest beings around anymore.
Oh, yeah.
We build our entire civilization on that idea, being at the top of the cognitive food chain, and suddenly, beam, it's being challenged.
It's a lot like that quote from Douglas Hofstadter. You know him, right? He wrote Gödel, Escher, Bach. Anyway, he said, thinking about computers becoming smarter than humans made him feel like all of humanity was about to be, and these were his words, eclipsed and turned to dust. Yeah, heavy stuff to think about. And that's actually a good point to bring up Jorian's framework, The Prince and the Honest Man.
Ah, yes, good one.
It's basically a way of understanding how people react to this idea, this potential shift in, who or what's the smartest around.
It's a brilliant analogy, really. On the one hand, you've got your Machiavellian prince all about power, control, right? They'd look at the singularity as this thing to be managed, maybe even kept secret, to avoid mass panic and, of course, keep their own position secure.
Makes sense. So who's on the other side?
Okay, so on the other side, you've got the Enlightenment honest man, someone who values transparency, open dialogue, thinking through the ethics of it all.
Okay, I'm starting to see the difference.
They'd be the ones pushing for democratic control over how AI is developed, making sure everyone has a say in how this technology shapes our future.
So it's like two opposite ends of a spectrum,
Yeah.
control versus transparency.
Exactly. Secrecy versus openness. And get this. We actually asked ChatGPT, the GPT-4 version, to be specific how each of these archetypes, the prince and the honest man, how they might approach the singularity.
Oh, that's a cool idea. What did it say?
Surprisingly insightful, really. It described the prince figure potentially trying to downplay, maybe even hide the whole thing, the singularity, just to control the flow of information.
Prevent mass hysteria.
Yeah, and of course, maintain their grip on power naturally. Classic power move.
Makes sense. So what about the honest man? How will they handle it, according to ChatGPT?
Total transparency. ChatGPT said they'd push for these open discussions about what the singularity could mean, advocate for ethical guidelines, democratic oversight, the whole nine yards.
Wow. So they want everyone to be prepared, informed, ready to make decisions about our future.
Exactly.
It's wild to think about these two very different approaches actually playing out in the real world. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And the really interesting part, this isn't just a theoretical debate anymore. Look at what happened at OpenAI back in November 2023.
You're talking about the whole Sam Altman
Yeah,
situation. One
exactly.
minute he's the CEO, he's publicly talking about the possibility of the singularity happening, even questioning if AI might be more of a creature than a tool.
Right.
And the next minute, boom, he's out. It felt like something was being hidden, like there was more to the story.
The timing was definitely, well, suspicious.
For sure.
Altman makes those comments about pushing back the veil of ignorance when it comes to the true nature of AI, and then bam, removed from his position just like that.
Yeah, makes you wonder what was going on behind the scenes.
Definitely raises some questions, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. It's like something out of a political thriller.
Yeah, totally.
So in this scenario, who's the prince pulling the strings? Who's the
Well,
mastermind?
that's where it gets even more interesting. Remember Ilya Sutskever? OpenAI's chief scientist. He played a key role in Altman's initial removal, and it just so happens that Sutskever is a big believer in the singularity.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Sutskever, convinced that the singularity was close, orchestrated this whole thing like a coup to control how the story unfolded?
It's definitely something to consider.
Wow. Talk about palace intrigue. This is better than fiction.
Right. And there's another layer to this whole thing. Reuters reported on a rumor that some OpenAI researchers had actually warned the board about a huge AI breakthrough.
Whoa, hold on. Like a big one.
Yeah, a major breakthrough. And they were afraid of it, thought it could be a serious threat to humanity.
Okay, now my head's really spinning. Cryptic statements about AI, a sudden power shift at one of the world's leading AI companies, whispers of a potentially world-altering technological breakthrough.
It's a lot to unpack.
It's a lot. What is going on here?
Yeah.
It's like we've stumbled onto the set of like a super high-stakes thriller, right?
Tell me about it.
Except the stakes are real. And it's not just some action movie plot. It's the future of, well, intelligence itself.
It is pretty wild when you put it like that.
So how does effective altruism fit into all of this?
Yeah.
Because honestly, when I hear that term,
yeah,
it makes me think of like a motivational poster in a corporate office. Be effectively altruistic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right. Oh. Right. Well, it's a little, it's a bit more complicated than that.
Okay, good. Because I was hoping you were going to say that.
So effective altruism, EA, for short, it's a philosophy kind of social movement too.
Okay.
And it's all about using like evidence and reason to figure out how we can do the absolute most good possible.
Okay. I mean, that sounds like a pretty good goal.
Definitely. It's all about maximizing the good our actions can do. And often that means focusing on long-term issues, stuff that affects the entire globe.
Okay. That makes sense. But where's the connection to AI?
Yeah.
And what about all that drama at OpenAI, the boardroom stuff? How does that all fit in?
It's all about the connections. Think about some of the big names in the EA movement.
Okay, like who?
Sam Bankman-Fried, for instance, remember FTX? And even Elon Musk with his whole Neuralink project.
Right, right, I see what you mean.
They've both been pretty vocal about the risks that come with AI development if it's not kept in check, if we're not careful.
True. They've talked about AI potentially getting smarter than us. The whole intelligence surpassing human intelligence thing and the need to make sure AI is aligned with, well, with human values. That's a big one.
Exactly.
So are you saying that this whole OpenAI situation, it was like this clash of ideologies within the EA movement itself?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. You see, Altman himself, he's actually criticized the EA movement before. He thinks they go a little overboard with the fear-mongering around AI.
Really? Even though he was running OpenAI?
Yeah. Yep. He thinks that focusing only on the worst case scenarios, it can be counterproductive. Like it might scare people away from innovation that could actually be really beneficial.
Hmm. Interesting. So where do the OpenAI board members fit into this? Weren't some of them into EA?
That's the thing. Some of the board members who voted against Altman, they were associated with EA.
Whoa. Okay. So hold on. We've got these conflicting views on how to deal with the risks of AI. And it's happening within a movement that's supposed to be all about doing good in the world.
It's messy. Right.
That's an understatement. This is complicated.
That's why I think Jorian's prince, an honest man framework is so relevant here. Remember how the prince is all about control? Maybe even keeping the singularity under wraps to avoid mass panic?
Right, right. Keep the peace by keeping it a secret kind of thing.
Exactly. So it's possible that the EA-aligned board members, they saw Altman's openness about AI, his willingness to even question if we're on the verge of creating something more than just a tool, as, I don't know, reckless maybe?
Too much, too soon kind of thing.
Right. Like maybe he was rocking the boat too much. They might have felt they had to step in, control how the story was being told, basically prevent a panic that they thought could undermine their own work to steer AI development in a safe and positive direction.
Wow. So in their minds, they became the prince, doing what they thought was necessary to protect humanity, even if it meant going against Altman.
It's a possibility.
And Altman, with his emphasis on transparency and open discussion, he'd be the honest man in this scenario.
Exactly. He seemed to genuinely believe that having open discussions about AI, even if it meant acknowledging some uncomfortable truths about what AI might be capable of, it was essential. Don't forget about OpenAI's employees in all of this either.
Oh, right. What was their take?
They were overwhelmingly on Altman's side. They basically staged this digital revolt when the board made their decision, which suggests that they also favored transparency and maybe they felt that the board was acting out of fear rather than looking at the situation objectively.
Fascinating. So it's this constant push and pull, right? Trying to control the narrative to avoid chaos, but also needing to have honest conversations to grapple with such a complex and rapidly changing technology. Makes you wonder, though, how often is that panic argument used to justify things that are actually about power and control?
the million-dollar question. Remember that thought experiment we mentioned earlier, the paperclip maximizer?
Yeah, the one where the AI turns everything into paperclips.
Oh, that one. It's a classic example of how our fear of AI going rogue, while not totally crazy, can sometimes overshadow more balanced discussions about how to develop AI responsibly, ethically.
So we're so busy worrying about the AI turning everything into paperclips.
Yeah.
We don't stop to ask who gets to decide what the AI should be doing in the first place.
Precisely.
And more importantly, who benefits from those decisions.
Exactly. And that leads us to another crucial point in Jorion's work. We desperately need regulations for AI development.
Oh, absolutely. And like yesterday, right?
He says we have to set clear guidelines, safeguards, like now, before this technology outruns our ability to understand, let alone control it.
It does feel a bit like we're trying to build a plane while we're flying it, you know?
Totally. And we can't just rely on a few tech companies to be good or hope that algorithms will somehow magically be benevolent.
Right. Because that's worked so well so far.
We need robust systems. Systems that are democratically accountable and transparent to make sure that AI development actually serves humanity. Yeah. Not just a select few.
Especially since it seems like the speed of AI progress is already outpacing our ability to really understand what's happening, let alone create effective laws.
Exactly. It's a tough spot to be in. One of the most interesting ideas Jorion brings up is this concept of a Sismondi tax.
A Sismondi tax. Okay, now we're talking solutions. I like it. Tell me more about this Sismondi tax, though. What is it?
It's named after this guy, Simone di Sismondi. He was a 19th century historian, an economist too, and he was worried about how technology could displace workers, you know, like make people lose their jobs and make inequality worse.
Right. Yeah, that's a big concern these days too.
Exactly. So basically, Jorion's proposing this tax on the wealth that's created by automation.
So like if a company replaces a bunch of their workers with AI and their profits go way up.
Exactly. Those extra profits, the ones made possible by the AI, they'd be taxed, subject to this special tax.
Interesting. So instead of like a universal basic income that everyone pays for, it's specifically tied to the companies, the ones who are benefiting from the automation in the first place.
Right. It's like we're acknowledging that in a way, the robots, the AI, they're contributing to the economy, right?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So they should also contribute to taking care of the people whose jobs they might be taking over, helping them transition, you know?
It's like a robot responsibility tax.
Uh-huh. Yeah, something like that. But it's a way to deal with all the potential economic disruption that people are worried about as AI becomes more widespread. And some people argue it's a fairer approach than just, you know, expecting everyone to chip in for a universal basic income.
It's making me think about how much we focus on AI disrupting things, automating jobs, all that.
Right.
But we don't always think about creating systems to make sure those disruptions don't end up hurting huge groups of people, leaving them worse off.
Exactly. It's not just about preventing the worst case scenarios. It's about making sure the benefits of AI are shared, that everyone has a chance to thrive in this new landscape.
It all comes back to that question of control and transparency, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Who gets to shape the future? And how do we make sure that future works for everyone?
Absolutely. And that brings us back to Jorion's thought-provoking question for all of us, something to really chew on.
Yeah.
Imagine you're at the table, right? Not a literal table, but you're in the room where these big decisions about AI are being made, not just about the algorithms, but like the big picture stuff.
Oh, wow. Okay.
How much are we going to tell the public about how quickly AI is developing? How do we get ready for the social and economic shifts that might be coming down the line?
Big questions.
And maybe the biggest one of all.
Let me guess. Do we admit that the singularity might actually be closer than we think?
You got it. So you're at that table. What's guiding your choices? What do you do?
Wow. Talk about a thought experiment. Do I go full prince mode and try to control the narrative, you know, prevent mass panic?
Right, keep it all under wraps.
Or do I embrace the honest man approach, push for complete transparency, even if it means things might get a little messy in the short term? Man, that's a tough one. How do you even begin to weigh those options?
That's what makes it such a compelling question. What are your top priorities? What ethical framework are you using when you're dealing with something this world-changing? Do you trust governments to handle it? Tech companies? Do we need some kind of global collaboration? These are massive questions with no easy answers.
And let's not forget, who even gets to be at that decision-making table in the first place? Because if it's just a small group of powerful people, tech elites, or even a group of effective altruists, even if they have good intentions,
yeah.
Well, then we're back to those issues of power and control, aren't we?
100%. And that's the beauty of Jorian's framework. It's not just about how individuals react to the singularity, but how it acts as this lens to understand the larger societal forces at play. Because the singularity, if and when it happens, it won't be just this technological blip on the radar. It'll be a seismic shift. Socially, politically, philosophically.
The world changes overnight.
Exactly. And just like with any major upheaval, the question of who's holding the reins, who has the power, that becomes the most important question of all.
It's a lot to process, you know? It's like we're standing at the edge of this huge unknown territory, something that could completely change our reality as we know it. And we're still trying to figure out which way is up.
And that's the reality we're facing. The future is being written right now, every single day, in lines of code, in boardrooms, in research labs. It's easy to feel small, insignificant even, when things are changing so fast. But that's precisely why conversations like this matter so much. Even if we can't predict what's coming next, we can at least try to understand the choices we're making today and how those choices might shape the future.
It's like that old saying, right?
Which one?
The only constant is change.
Ain't that the truth?
Well, on that note to our listeners, we'll leave you with this. The singularity, it might seem like something out of a sci-fi movie, but the questions it raises, those are as real as it gets. So what role are you going to play in shaping the future of intelligence, even if that future is still a big question mark? What would you do if you were at that table? Think about it. And until next time, this has been The Deep Dive.